The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today we have the New York Times best-selling author of The Bone Collector. He's back. He has a new book called The Skin Collector. Jeffrey Deaver is in the house. He's got, gosh, probably over 20 books to his credit. Jeffrey, welcome.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's good to talk to you today.
The Skin Collector. Tell me a little bit about this. This is a Lincoln Rhyme book, correct?
Sure. About 15 years ago, I was looking around for an idea to write a new book about, and I came up with this thought. I was going to create a sort of a Sherlock Holmes for our time, modern-day Sherlock Holmes, a man who had to outthink the villain, because I was so tired of all the cliches we've seen where the hero pulled out a gun at the last minute and shot the bad guy, or suddenly remembered that he could karate kick, and then he beat up the bad guy that way. I wanted to create a mental character who was the hero. So I developed Lincoln Rhyme. Now, Lincoln Rhyme, if your listeners aren't familiar, the star of the movie The Bone Collector, Denzel Washington, Angelina Jolie was in that as well, is something a little bit more than a forensic detective. He's a quadriplegic. He's unable to move from the neck down. I did that because I wanted him to be a hero who literally had to outthink the villain, engage in these mental chess matches, and couldn't have some karate move that he'd hidden away. He has to outthink the villain. Well, at the end of The Bone Collector, one of the bad guys escapes, and he's been coming back over the last roughly 9 Lincoln Rhyme novels in the series, tormenting Lincoln Rhyme and tormenting the readers as well. Finally, I figured time for him to either meet his comeuppance or maybe succeed and do something really nasty to Lincoln Rhyme and Amelia. And I won't say any more about it because I want your listeners to be intrigued, but that is The Skin Collector.
I'm sure that you described The Skin Collector a little bit in your book. Is this the first time that you've described this villain, or do people know him if they've read the series?
No, they wouldn't. They really wouldn't know him because I'll tell you, Mark, I was doing an interview some years ago, and the interviewer turned to me and he pointed his finger at me and he said, "Mr. Deaver, what do you say to the charge that you're manipulative and conniving in your books?" And I said, "Thank you," because I consider that a compliment. No, what I've done over the last 15 years is hint about this villain, but he's always been off camera. We've never really seen him and his hench people, his associates. Only in The Skin Collector do we actually meet him face to face. And I'll tell you a little bit about him because he's truly a creepy character. His name is Billy Haven, and he's an ace tattoo artist. I mean, he paints as well, and he does sketches and sculpture. He's a very talented artist. But he finds his real outlet in tattooing people. Well, when he comes to New York City, which is Lincoln Rhyme's province, he does a little more than just tattoo them. He tattoos a secret message on them using not ink, but poison. And the message is intended to taunt the police into trying to figure out what he's about, where he's going to strike next. And the book becomes a typical Jeffrey Deaver novel. It moves over the course of about 2 days very, very quickly. It has lots of internal reversals in it. It has a big surprise ending. And then after that, there's a big surprise ending. And then after that, there's a big surprise ending. I keep flipping backwards and forwards at the very end of the book. And I'd say more about it, but then maybe your listeners wouldn't go out and buy a copy. So we can't have that.
You know, Jeffrey, in the back of the page, Jodi Picoult, she writes, "Jeffrey, you owe me some sleep because these are page turners and you really don't want to put the book down."
When I sit down to envision a book, I think of roller coaster. I don't think of a literary novel. I don't think of some kind of slow-moving character study. I spend 8 months of the year it takes me to write a book doing nothing but the outline, Well, I shouldn't say nothing but the outline. I do the research at the same time. The outline may begin with nothing more than this. Skin Collector, idea, colon. Villains from Bone Collector finally come back. Bad guy tattoos victims with messages that have to be deciphered. Period. Well, that's not much of a book right there. I spend the next 8 months fleshing that out so that at the end of that time, I have an outline. In the case of the Skin Collector, it was 140 pages long. I knew where every single element of the plot was. I have a lot of clues. I have subplots that all have to be tied together. I know where every character is introduced in the story. I know when that character leaves the story, either vertically or horizontally, because some people don't survive the end of the book. And when I'm finally convinced that everything comes together to my satisfaction, then I sit down and write the book. But that outline is intended very specifically to give the readers the most emotional experience they can. I really do want this to be a roller coaster ride that grabs them by the lapels in the opening scene. I mean, really, the opening couple of paragraphs, and then races them through the story to the final paragraph, which in this case, the final paragraph has a huge surprise on it that I, so far, most people have not seen coming.
With the Skin Collector now, and your other books, I'm sure, like this, where you're not really over-describing everything. I know some authors really get into the description and stuff. And that kind of slows things down, doesn't it?
Oh, it sure does. I love my research. I spend a lot of time doing research. But the most important thing to remember about research is that most of it should be thrown out of the first draft. The Skin Collector is probably, I guess, maybe 400 pages long, and that would be about 550 manuscript pages when I turned it in on the typeset paper. The original draft, 780 pages, because I was so interested in things like the culture of body modification tattoos, so interested in the infrastructure of New York, and so interested in a topic I can't mention now because it's a big twist in the book, but that resulted in the book being, the first draft, being roughly, well, over 200 pages longer than the final version I submitted. Now, that always happens with my books. I always know that I'm going to trim it down. I cut out over 200 pages before I sent it to my editor. Because when I went back and read it, I said, digression, digression, digression. Is that a roller coaster? No, roller coasters don't stop at the middle of the ride for the conductor or whoever runs the roller coaster to say, oh, look at that pretty bird over there. I could tell the whole history of this amusement park. No, we want to hold on. We want to race through the story as quickly as you can.
In your book, The Skin Collector, there's a basement, there's a door open, maybe a little light. You bring that right to life. How do you make things so descriptive?
I'm very lucky. Most of writing my type of fiction, this popular commercial fiction, in fact, probably most of writing most fiction is just hard work. You have an idea, you have to translate that into words that will present a clear image for the reader or the listener. In my case, I have a very vivid imagination, and I see things quite visually. So what I will do is when I look at a section in the outline, let's say I had to write a scene, Lincoln discovers clue A or clue B. So I close my eyes or shut the lights out. I can touch type, and I sit down and let my mind translate Lincoln discovers clue A, which is obviously a scene that could be interpreted a thousand different ways, into something that I think would really work. And that's where the visual, the creativity comes out.
Jeffrey, the way that you write, you know, you almost write it like, or maybe you think it like it's a screenplay, and you're the director and you have to add everything. Is that a fair statement?
Sure. I have had three movies made of my books, and I've been involved in television. I've enjoyed the process. Usually I just cash the check and get on with writing books. But the reason I've never been personally involved in an adaptation or never been involved on the set as a script writer for an original script idea is that, frankly, I don't play well with others. And when I write a novel, I have complete control over things like the story, the dialogue, the acting, the set design, and in some books, I'll even say the soundtrack, because my book 3 years ago, XO, as in Hugs and Kisses, the letters XO, I wrote an album of country western music that accompanied that book. It was about a young country western singer who was stalked by a kind of a rabid fan. And to increase the authenticity of the book and to include clues in songs, I thought, well, why put the lyrics in? Why not make an actual album? So if your listeners are interested, they can go to YouTube or iTunes and download the few of the songs for free, which was kind of fun. But see, that's the whole world of the story is mine when I write novels. That's not really the case of a writer for TV or movies. However, I was very, very influenced by both TV and cinema when I was growing up, because you can get a bit lazy. When you were talking about adding too many facts into a book, you cannot do that on TV or in a movie. Every minute counts. I don't know what the figure is, but presumably they don't usually use film anymore, but let's say 1 second of filming time is $10,000 or $20,000 of production cost. Well, you can't afford to waste any of that space. You have to get cut right to the chase. And so that was for me, that was quite a lesson to learn that Hollywood films, boy, they don't fool around. They've got to get to the story, tell it as efficiently as they can in a very impactful way, and then the end. And people go out, you know, with their palms sweaty and their hearts pounding if it's been a thriller, or sobbing if it's a romance story, either for happiness or sorrow. That, to me, is the epitome of telling stories like this.
Jeffrey Deaver, not only an author, but also a songwriter. What's the big challenge with writing songs, music, and writing like a novel?
A very good question, Mark, and it's a lesson that I think all writers should pay some attention to. With a song, less is more. It's very easy to throw out a lot of words, but you can't afford to do that in a song. You have the maybe 3 minutes tops. Now, when I was growing up listening to music, you'd have Led Zeppelin or Bob Dylan with the extended cuts that could be 45 minutes long for one song. Maybe that's an extreme, but you'd certainly have much longer versions. You don't really see that quite so much anymore. When you write a novel, you have to be very concerned about being concise, not digressing, not putting too much fluff in, concentrating the message. I'll say another thing about songwriting that is different, but I think that authors should pay attention to as well, authors of novels I'm speaking of now. With the song lyric, the sound of the word is very important too. Not just what the word means, but what it sounds like. Is it alliterative? You know, Peter Piper, is that what we want to hear in the song? Well, maybe it is. A novelist has to pay attention to that too, but not a lot do, and I'm guilty of that myself. Sometimes I just throw words down on the page, and I'm not as diligent as I ought to be when I come up with the way the words actually put together the scene. Now, I can describe, he pulled out a gun and shot somebody. Well, that's very pedestrian. Can't we come up with something more poetic than that, if one could use the word poetry when you're gunning down a bad guy?
You know, Jeffrey Deaver's song, I'm trying to think what kind of song that might be to a country and western song. I drove up to her house and I knocked down the door. I grabbed her by the neck and now she is no more.
That's good, Mark. We want to collaborate on that. I'll come up with a tune for it. And I'll tell you exactly what the album was about. Some of the songs were traditional country western songs that kind of established my character. Who was based on Taylor Swift, a young, vivacious country western singer who did a lot of crossover music. You know, nowadays country isn't what country was back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Well, what I wanted to create was a world in which the burden of celebrity has a very dark side to it. So imagine Kaylee Towne, that's the name of my country western singer, woman in her 20s, talented songwriter, who had a fan who had heard one of her songs, and the song was titled My Shadow. And the lyrics, and I respect you and your listeners so much, I'm not going to sing it myself because I'm not much of a musician anymore. But the lyrics were listened to in a rather, in a major key, sung in a happy voice, were rather affirming that was, don't worry, life throws a lot of bad stuff at you, but I'll be there for you. I'll be close as your shadow wherever you go. As bad as things get, you've got to know that I'll be there. I'll be there, your shadow. Well, sung in a happy way, well, oh, that's very nice. It could be a mother singing to her daughter or son, for instance. But sung with a kind of off syncopated beat, minor guitar or keyboard accompaniment, suddenly it becomes very dark, like, I'll be there. I'm your shadow. You're never getting away from me. And even though she meant it as a love song, the stalker took it as a dark anthem, really, meaning that I'll be with her forever. And that's basically what he acted upon until my heroine, Catherine Dance, this was not a Lincoln Rhyme novel, this was my other character, got involved on the case and tried to stop this fellow. But I, as you and maybe your listeners know, stalking is a very, very heinous offense, but it's also very difficult to stop. These stalkers are very clever people, and they know what lines not to cross, often until it's too late.
No, I had an album once that had some authors on it that were singing. And I know Stephen King, I think he's in a
Rock group. Bottom Remainders.
Yeah.
That's what it was called.
Yeah. Were you on an album like that?
No. I did one. I did contribute to an album that came out years ago called A Merry Band of Murderers. And there were probably a dozen of us authors who contributed a song. Let's say it didn't make it to the Billboard Top 40 or 50 or 500, but it was fun to do. Now, this album, the one that accompanied XO, was done by professional musicians. We released it as a commercial album, and you can buy it on iTunes, and you can listen to it on Spotify and these various download services. I had pros do it because, again, I respect my fans so much, I didn't want to sing and drive them all to distraction.
Jeffrey, we were talking about a few of your books being made into movies. Some authors like the movies after they've come out on film. Some don't. What was your feeling?
I was pleased with the Bone Collector. That was the main feature release. I've had Devil's Teardrop was a Lifetime film. Dead Silence was an HBO original film. But the big one with Denzel Washington and Angelina Jolie was The Bone Collector. And I thought it was a perfectly fine thriller. I enjoyed it. But I have to say that I have, as I mentioned before, I have complete control over the novels. I would not know how to put a movie together, no desire to be involved in it. And frankly, I don't have a lot of patience for authors who say, oh, they took my vision, they destroyed my baby. No, your book is your baby. Your book is your vision. And I'm tempted to say to them, oh, you hated the movie? Did you send the check back in protest? No, because none of them did. We know that readers are very intelligent people. If there's a bad movie made of a good book, they know that's the director's fault or the actor's fault. The book remains as it is. And occasionally, there's a good movie made of a bad book. And the authors should just suck it up and take that for what it's worth.
Skin Collector, of course, your brand new book, The Bone Collector, a fantastic movie, very profitable. Do you see The Skin Collector as a movie?
Oh, I certainly hope so. The world of Hollywood is a little odd. As it turns out, there have been 11 books in the Lincoln Rhyme series. I write very cinematically. Any one of them could become a novel, The Skin Collector in particular, because it has all these eerie scenes of underground passages in New York City, many of which are I've been to and are, believe me, really creepy. And of course, body art is very popular now, tattooing and body modification. It's a very current book. But there are some legal issues about distribution that I think are holding up the Lincoln Rhyme sequels, which I'm not too happy about myself, and my fans are not too happy about. But that's Hollywood. That's the world of business. But I certainly hope it does become a film in the near future. I'd like to play a dead body in it. So if any producers are listening, could I be the first victim? I just think that would be a lark. I think my girlfriend would vote for that one, too.
Yeah, there you go. The Skin Collector, now, you said you did a lot of research on the books, and all your books, you do a lot of research. You don't look like you're really tatted up or anything, but you've got a jacket on. No. What kind of research did you do maybe at a tattoo parlor?
All book research. I'll tell you right now, Mark. No, I think the I have no bones about, so to speak, no bones about admitting this. I'm 64. I think the tattoo ship has sailed for me, although I said that once at a signing and some fellow came up who was, I think, 70 and said, showed me his arm and said, I just got this for my new girlfriend. So I'm not saying never, but probably I'll be on to a different topic for my new book, so I don't think it would work. But I will tell you very briefly how the whole idea came about, and this was kind of interesting. I knew I wanted to do a sequel to The Bone Collector. And I knew in general terms that I wanted this villain, this group of villains, to come back. But I didn't quite know how to structure it. What motif would I use? What themes and subplots? I was having lunch with my assistant, and a waitress came up to us, asked to take our order, and she had a sleeveless blouse on, and I saw a very interesting tattoo on her arm. I think there were Asian characters or maybe some Indian Sanskrit characters, but I couldn't read them. But there was clearly a message there, and I stared at it, and she said, Jeff, she knew me. She said, Jeff, can I take your order? Jeff? And I said, oh, I'm sorry, Cheyenne. I'm sorry. You just gave me a great idea to kill some people. And, of course, she blinked a little bit. Now, she knew I wrote murder mysteries, but I don't think she made the connection right there. And I said, no, don't worry about it. And that was my inspiration for the villain in The Skin Collector, a fellow who tattoos people with this message and uses poison instead of ink. And I spent time in tattoo parlors. I learned quite a bit about it. Many tattoo artists are true artists. There are some people that follow patterns. You can put a stencil on the skin, you kind of peel that off and then tattoo on it. And, you know, it can look just fine. But there are some people who do what's called a bloodline, which means they don't use any stencil at all, no pre-drawing. They are just so talented, they take the tattoo machine. It's not called a gun, by the way. It's called a tattoo machine. Only amateurs say a gun, I learned. It's called a tattoo machine. And they can do this incredible work of art. And Cheyenne, the very charming waitress I was telling you about, had, after the book came out, just coincidentally, she had a scene from The Wizard of Oz put on her on her thigh, that is as good as any pen and ink drawing could possibly be. It's Judy Garland looking a bit frightened as she confronts the witch. And I'll tell you, this is true art. And I was very impressed with the level of talent that's going on. And also some very interesting other types of body modification. Of course, we know about metal studs and things like that, but also scars. People do scar themselves. Some people actually have things removed, parts of their body removed. And believe me, if I'm not going to do a tat, I'm not going to go there.
I think some people even like slice their tongues up to be kind of forced.
Yes.
And,
yep.
Yeah, a lot of different art out there for the body. The Skin Collector, of course, your brand new book. What's next for Jeffrey Deaver?
I'm always working on a new project. I'm doing a Catherine Dance book for next year. Catherine Dance is my police investigator from California. She starred in XO, which I was telling you about, and The Sleeping Doll. I've written a number of novels, so they're all, forgive me, they're all kind of running together at the moment. And Roadside Crosses, that will be out in 2015. A New Lincoln Rhyme in 2016. And I'm writing a standalone that will be part of my political trilogy. My book, The Kill Room, which was published last year, was a Lincoln Rhyme novel, the first in my political trilogy. This book, as yet unnamed, is a standalone political trilogy. And then I'm also outlining a Catherine Dance book for 2017, which will be part of the political trilogy. No rest for the wicked, I think they say, Mark, so I'm a busy boy.
And Jeffrey, you know, when you first started writing, a lot of authors say, gosh, you know, I had to keep sending out copy and I would get rejection letters. Mm. How did that work for you? I can imagine you ever getting a rejection letter.
Oh, you're wonderful, Mark. But oh, yes. I have, with my first novels, never saw the light of day. They were never published. They saw the light of day because they went to editors or agents, and then they were soundly rejected. And then I learned a bit more about the process. But oh no, if any of your listeners are aspiring writers, however, I have to tell them one of the most important pieces of advice: rejection in publishing is simply part of the game. But remember, it's a speed bump. It is not a brick wall. You should never let rejection stop you. Now, that's not to say that a particular book is not fit for publication, because I've written those, and in fact, almost all authors have written those, but that doesn't mean that you, as a writer, should be stopped because you get rejected. If you can't sell one book, put it aside and try something else. Remember, speed bump, not a brick wall.
I want to find out more about Jeffrey Deaver, The Skin Collector, your other books, which, you know, you've written so many, I don't even know if you could name them all, and I don't know if we'd have time to go through them, but if I wanted to find out more about Jeffrey Deaver, the books, where do I go?
JeffreyDeaver.com, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter, and you'll find all of that information at JeffreyDeaver.com.
All right. The Skin Collector is the brand new book. You better have some time on your hand, because you're not going to want to put this thing down. It starts out, it's got a great hook. I mean, we have this lovely lady going down. She's working. She goes down to the basement. And, well, from there, like Jeffrey said, it's a roller coaster ride. The Skin Collector, the brand new book by Jeffrey Deaver. Jeffrey, thanks a lot.
Well, thanks, Mark. A pleasure talking to you.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Jeffrey Deaver, author of his brand new book, The Skin Collector. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.